and welcome to Mindset, an HCD vidcast, where we dive into the world of applied consumer neuroscience and market research with leading experts in the field. My name is Michelle Nagella, PhD in behavioral neuroscience and Director of Research and Innovation at HCD.
And I'm Catherine Ambrose, the Manager of Behavioral and Marketing Sciences with HCD. As your hosts, we are going to act as the buzzkills for the buzzwords, taking time to critically think about the limitations and pitfalls of emerging trends and topics within the field to help you identify what innovation has a lot of untapped potential or is too good to be true.
Now, HCD is a full-service research house which provides research capabilities on consumers by looking at how they perceive, evaluate, and respond to different types of stimuli, such as looking at product experiences, communications, or just general consumer and shopper experiences. We use a combination of tools that come from psychology, physiology, neuroscience, as well as the traditional methods that people typically use to see how they experience different stimuli. That stimuli can range from the early stages of exploration all the way through the final product validation tests. This is what we refer to as applied consumer neuroscience.
So stick around for more curious conversations as we chat our way through the ever-evolving space of consumer science. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Mindset. We are so happy to be here today. It's Michelle and I back again, and we are joined with a lovely guest today, Nick Thomas. Nick, welcome to the show.
Great to be here. Thanks, Catherine. Really looking forward to this.
Awesome. We've known you for quite some time now, and I know I've been receiving your newsletter for many years at this point. But in case people haven't heard of you, can you just give a little bit of description of who you are and a little bit about what you do?
Sure. Do you want me to start with the very short tweet myself or with a slightly longer description?
Let's start with the short tweet.
Okay, in 280 characters, I'm Nick Thomas. I'm happily married. I'm the proud father of two boys, aged 5 and 9. I'm living in Surrey in the UK. I'm an overeater and an underachiever, a jack of all trades, bored by doing any one thing for too long, and yet somehow I've managed to found and own and run Mr. Web Limited for 22 years. It publishes Dr. No, the global insight industry's only proper daily paper. We'll come back to that if you want.
The proper daily paper. So tell us a little bit. You have Mr. Webb and you have Dr. No. Let's hear, how did those things come about?
We've got a sub-brand, which is almost as well known as the company name. It's probably against all the rules of branding and company setup. But Mr. Webb obviously comes from MR, standing for market research, which 23 years ago certainly was a perfectly acceptable term to use for the industry, whether people wanted to change it to insights, data and analytics, whatever these days. But I mean, it's a catchy name as well. We tend to call it Mr. Webb rather than MR Webb. But we never get cross with people who call it MR Webb because that's where it comes from, and that's fine. Then the Daily Research News Online, or Dr. No for short, was introduced about a year and a half after we started the company as a kind of online resource for market researchers. The news was originally supposed to be just a way of promoting the thing which made all our money, which was a job board in those days. And for the first year and a bit, we didn't have a daily news service. Someone came and suggested it to us, launched it for us, and we kind of took it over ourselves after a few years. That's really become the mainstay of what we do, and that is based around a daily news email, which goes currently to about 10,000 opt-in subscribers around the world, very international, and it's got between 6 and 15 headlines about what's happening in the world of research and insights and analytics each day. Tries not to go into horrendous detail about any one item. It's kind of one page length for each article, but it does manage a bit more detail than some of the other quick news summaries out there.
So why market research?
Because that's what I started my career doing. I was a B2B researcher for 3.5-4 years with a company called IFF Research in London, which I loved doing. But I kind of wanted to go out on my own after only a very few years. I pride myself in having retired from working for somebody else at the same age that Bjorn Borg retired, which was 26.
That's ambitious.
anybody. Yes. But I said, right, I'm not working for anybody else now. Perhaps nobody else would want me to work for them anymore. I don't know. It gets more difficult after a while, self-employed. But I started off as a researcher working for myself. And then along came the internet, more or less, 2 years, 3 years after I worked for myself. And just seemed an obvious thing to get into. And I started developing a resource for other market researchers, and it went from there.
That's incredible. And would you mind sharing, how has it changed over the past 24 years? What has that evolution been like for you?
It's changed amazingly. I mean, when we started, although it was called Mr. Web, and obviously it's an internet-based business and we published things online, we still did a lot of it by, obviously by phone call and also by fax. We posted things to people. We have a job board, which we've run since the very beginning, since November 1998, when we launched the site. And that used to be, the jobs used to be sent by people in the post, sending us details and we would type them in. And it's incredible looking back on it now, thinking that it kind of worked and it functioned like that. And we, you know, how much time we spent on the manual part of it. And pretty quickly, within the first 10 years, all that vanished. Nothing was sent by fax anymore. When it started, I had a list of candidates who told me what they were looking for. And I actually used to look through individual jobs and say, well, that's good for the ones who would like an SRE, as we call it, senior research exec level job, or a research manager or a director level, and kind of pick them out and choose tranches of people to send them to and do it manually, which just seems completely wacko these days, because it's all, automated these days.
But yeah. It's so interesting. Your evolution sounds very similar to HCD's own, evolution. Glenn was very similar. He was working for someone else, but he didn't want to. He wanted to, start his own company as well. And it was right around the time when the internet was really becoming more of a useful thing, particularly in market research. And this has been a really interesting and quickly evolving space, I think, particularly in the last few years. You talked about just the name alone, where you used MR. But now people have all sorts of titles. So when you're looking, if you're looking for a job and you're looking at titles, it can be a little challenging about what you're putting in that search bar, right?
Yes, definitely. It's challenging internationally as well, because the US and the UK, for example, use different words to describe different things. But certainly, things like you say, the word insights for a lot of people has replaced market research. They're embarrassed to admit that they're market researchers. I don't know why. I still think it's a perfectly legitimate thing to be doing.
Yeah.
And I think insight can be a bit vague and a bit overplayed sometimes. People describe data, mere data, as insight too often these days, when in fact there's no insight in it. You have to get the insight from it. But yes, all the terminology is changing. If you call somebody an exec, in the US, it means they're quite a senior person. If you call them that in the UK, they might have just started. They could be fresh out of college and they'd be a junior. And that gets very confusing. We have different job titles over there. In the UK, in Australia, there's a few subtle differences as well. So in Asia. Terminology is a big issue for us.
So it's not just adding an extra vowel when you're in the UK. It sounds like it's a little bit more complicated than that.
Yeah, there's lots of vowels when you have words like behavior cropping up all the time.
The extra U is always, it always throws me. And I know exactly where the company's from, looking at their presentations based on how they spell behavior quite often.
You wouldn't know that with research news. You'd only know who the article was about, because if it's an article about an American company, we use American spellings. And if it's about a British company, we use British. So we've kind of decided that we'll go with whoever we're going to.
We have to switch back and forth. Code switch, right?
Yeah.
So I have a question also, just thinking about, your newsletter, for example. You did talk about, how a lot of what you're providing are some of the positions that are available, but you also have sort of market insights, right, about what's going on in the field right now, like the hitting news that comes out. Where do you get that information?
Well, over the years, we've built up quite a lot of different sources. Hopefully, we operate much more like a proper newsroom now than we did when we started, when we used to just kind of go and search the web for things and talk to the people we already knew from being market researchers. And now we've got a lot of contacts. We get all the press releases. We've got a lot of subscriptions to other daily papers from around the industry, marketing papers and media publications, for example, legal publications. We get alerts set up either just by straightforward Google alerts or by other kind of, you know, alerts looking for particular types of news. So they get sent to us. We spend a lot of time scanning other publications, which I don't think others in this industry do particularly. We spend a little time trawling through things that we find from contacts, because we've got the job board and we've got various directories on the site and things. We have contact with other people, and if anybody mentions that they've left or they're about to or they've just joined, then we'll follow that up. We'll get a story from that. So it helps that we are researchers as well, that we have been and that we know all the people there, and we snowball from that. But it operates quite like, I think, much more like a normal newsroom now than it used to. That's when we started.
Who are the we? Tell us a little bit about your organization.
It was run by a lady called Nikki Hardy, who kind of came to us and suggested it, and who was brilliant and got it off the ground, but who left after a few years. Since 2006, my news editor has been Mel Crowther, Melanie Crowther, who's now living in Portugal and has been a remote worker for quite a while, but is very much the core of the news team. She writes the news 3.5-4 days a week, and I write it the rest. So I'm still keeping my hand in as a news writer and editor. But Mel is the center of things on the news side.
That's awesome. And so when you are coming across all these different ideas and pieces of news, how do you know which one you're like, you know what, we want to be talking about this. We want to highlight this idea in the next paper or in the next issue. How do you decide that?
Quite often we'll get more than the requisite number of stories, quite a lot more. We'll have 20 things that we could include, and we'll have a filtering out job to do. There is the odd slow news day when, you know, we're lucky to find 6 items, and we always go for a minimum 6. That's kind of the format. That some days there's more of a winnowing down process than others, but we'll do it on the basis of what we know is of interest to readers, combined with kind of editorial policy, where there's a couple of things that we could get masses of and publish masses of, including people's events announcements and the awards that they've won. For example, every time somebody, you know, gets an Investors in People award that we have over here, kind of, you know, government award or an international standard or whatever, then we could publish that. And every time somebody runs a webinar, we could publish that. So we've kind of said we won't do those, but we major on things like appointments, acquisitions, legal news, new product launches. I can run you through the set sometime, but that sort of thing, because we found that they're of interest to readers, and we've got a pretty large, long-standing reader base from which to get feedback and to see which stories get most read. So that helps.
And that's
us.
An interesting question. So kind of a joke we always make internally is that, market researchers use all of these methodologies to study how well something performs for our clients. But very rarely do market researchers do market research on themselves and how they communicate, right? So how do you track trends, and how do you identify and work with what is perhaps the hardest hitting items, or, you know, how do you know that something's going to perform really well?
Well, you're right. We are kind of plumbers with leaky sinks, or whatever you call it, shoemakers whose children have no shoes in the
right.
Market research ourselves, or straight market research. We use a combination really of statistics. So we have our own stats from all our own handwritten programs about how many news various pages get and which are the most popular. And we combine that with anecdotal feedback. And we do spend a lot of time talking to our readers and our advertisers and all that about what they like. So there's not much in the way of surveys. We're always being offered, would you like us to do a survey? Promotion for whichever company does it. So we get lots of offers, but we kind of say no. We feel like we're on top of it. Maybe we shouldn't.
Yeah. I always get a giggle whenever we get reached out by another market research company offering to do market research for us. I'm like,
So kind of going off of that, I'm curious, and I do want to segue a little bit. What intrigued you about the idea of the latest issue that just came out, that was the Brain and Bodies issue? why did you decide to focus on that?
Okay, tiny bit of background, and then drag me back onto that question if you need to in a second, because I'm a terrible we have nearly always focused on news and not feature publications for all of our 20-something years, and that's because we feel there's a lot of other feature publications around in the research industry, but almost nothing that offers, as I've said, detailed news every day. So we're filling a niche, and we didn't want to expand beyond it and dilute what we do. But we came under a bit of pressure, nice kind of pressure, lots of requests to publish something about certain leading edge areas. And we decided that would fit in quite nicely with what we did if we had just four times a year maximum. We haven't managed that yet, but we're aiming for four times a year, covering four specific topics to do with the leading edge of research or up and coming techniques. And obviously, in the early days, being a web-based news service, we tended to attract a lot of leading edge researchers and technology researchers, whereas there were still paper publications around. There still are some, but we're not quite so leading edge these days, to be honest. But we've always enjoyed looking into the more newsworthy areas, which tend to be the up-and-coming things, the bits of research which are attracting investment at the moment. And four of those that we picked out were insights in the mobile age, so everything to do with mobile phones and gathering mobile usage data. Online communities, which we see as a really sort of underplayed, underhyped area of huge growth in the research industry. Data visualization, again, which we get a lot of clients, a lot of advertisers, and a lot of interest in it. So how to put across your data. And then for the fourth one, what we've called measuring brains and bodies, which is, well, Michelle, we've talked about this in some detail. What do you call it? We sort of called it neuromarketing or applied consumer neuroscience. So I think measuring brains and bodies summed it up quite nicely for me, all the everything that we can cover in that area. So that's the fourth of our four quarterly publications. As I say, we've never managed them quarterly yet, but that's what we're aiming for. Let's get my act together.
Yeah, I think with those topics for sure are very important in you know where the industry is going. But you also paired with that, with those writings, and you get to see a lot of the news that involves movement of people or appointments of people or even positions that are coming, you know, open, where they're looking for certain types of skill sets. Where do you see the future of market research headed? Like what are some of the trends that are going on right now that you've been able to observe?
Okay, well, yeah, you're right. We've done our own analysis, both of what appears in the news and the trends in that and what appears in job adverts, actually. And it's interesting to compare the two because news is often the leading edge of the hype. We've talked again a lot about hype, you and I, whereas the job ads tend to reflect what people are putting their money into now, because obviously they're paying a salary for somebody with these skills. So there are some interesting comparisons. I mean, some of the obvious things, some of them I've just mentioned that are leading edge topics, some of the growing things. Mobile, I think, is just kind of pervasive and is bound to become a bigger and bigger slice of everything we do. Social media analysis is one I haven't mentioned, which kind of came and partially went. It kind of rose a lot on the hype that you'd be able to do everything with social media, and I think some of that's reached a different stage in the cycle. People have realized it's a useful adjunct to various other techniques and forms of research, much in the way that we've talked about neuroscience in the last few months. You can use it alongside other things, but it's not going to answer all the questions. You know, it's not terribly representative. So that's a growth area, but I'd sort of qualify that as well. I mean, analytics is obviously I think probably the biggest single thing now in terms of what we report on in the news, not necessarily in terms of grabbing market share or replacing what used to be market research, but it's probably growing the sector. It depends what you want to include in it, really. There's people like SMR, the Global Research Organization, who are trying to sort of redefine or continually redefine their mission and say, what should we include? And what should we include in our league tables for global research industry? What should we include in our membership? To whom should we promote ourselves? And there's more and more analytics coming into that, more and more that you can do with data. And again, big data was certainly a massively hyped thing 10 years ago, as was neuroscience.
Yeah.
And That's taken a long time to bite as well and to really start to eat into things. There's rarely a press release about a product or a new feature which doesn't mention AI and machine learning now.
Yeah,
I'm a bit bored with describing things as artificial intelligence when, you know, I'm a sci-fi fan and nothing really comes close to true artificial intelligence. It just means machine learning. They're kind of confused, the two of them, to be honest. It means things that can pick up and teach themselves how to get better programs that make themselves better as they go along. And they're used in the same way, but they're very much talked about. Obviously, they are pretty useful and they're grabbing more of the mainstream now. So I would say just bringing analytics in and using it alongside existing techniques is probably the biggest single growth area I see at the moment.
Totally. I think you bring up a very good point where we're in a place where you can get data from anything, but with the fact that there's this abundance of data, people don't actually know what to do with all of it. So that seems to be the trend of how do we sort through this huge amount of data that we now have access to, where, you know, the phone is so much embedded in our lifestyle that they can really get an understanding of what people are doing at any point, at anywhere. And so analytics is really crucial in organizing and sorting through and really figuring out, like, do we actually need all this data? What data is actually valuable? And then, you know, recognizing, is any of it actually significant and powerful and useful to actually have? Because who really cares if the person is walking from block A to block B 3 times a day? You know, it's like, how is that helping you? So it's interesting as we're in this crazy, crazy world of just constant measurement, you know? So it's definitely a huge trend.
No, you're right. People talk about having too much data and having to bring people in to interpret it all the time. I think if I can keep this in my head long enough, there are two things that researchers can use, two things they can tap to make the most of that new market and the need for people to cut down the data. One is obviously that they're very skilled in recognizing what's significant and what isn't, that we should be sort of teaching to other people, making more of the fact that we've been doing that for years, and now we've got far more data than ever before, and therefore this skill is more useful than it was before. And the second one is the privacy angle, because a lot of the data that's around has been gathered without people's knowledge or without people's proper consent. You have to be very, very careful how you use it. A lot of it's certainly been gathered illegally, you know, if we were to go into the detail of it. And I can be wonderfully vague and say a lot of it without saying who, so that's fine. But a lot of the stuff from mobile phones, for example, people don't know is being collected. And you have to be very careful about how that's used. Whereas researchers have always, or nearly always anyway, started from the point of view of anonymity. And this is something that came up in our mobile age supplement a great deal with Chris Haven and Reality Mind, talking in his introduction about how we start from the presumption of anonymity and of confidentiality, and people can trust us when we come into something to know what they have to do with the data, what data they're allowed, and what they can do with it. And if we can build out from that into the big data arena and have the kind of scale and ease of collection that the technology companies do, then it's going to be more difficult for them to build back the other way and pick up the privacy and the tradition of thinking about anonymity. And therefore, research should have a good head start in that field. And Chris is someone who combines technology and research on a daily basis in everything he does. And that was a very interesting supplement talking about that as well.
So what is the most surprising or craziest bit of news in your career that you've seen that you think was just like really shocked you?
The most shocking bit of news. Oh, well, the most shocking was the one that we talked about happening for years, but we kind of never actually thought it did, which was Sir Martin Sorrell leaving WPP. That was our byword that I would say to Mel every evening: is that everything in the can now? Is that everything finished? We've got all our news articles. And she would say, you know, if it was early in the day and she'd finish, she'd say, yes, unless Martin Sorrell resigns before 6 o'clock, sort of thing. And then I'll add that one in. And then it actually kind of happened one day that he'd left the company in a slightly complicated circumstances. So that was the biggest shock that it finally happened, I think. But we've had plenty of other long-running sagas which have entertained us, both people who people who tried to buy other people, and it was contested, and it went backwards and forwards and backwards. Lots of stuff around problems at Arbitron and Comscore and things that have made big long-running sagas in the news. We had a long-running battle from someone called Vincent Bolloré, who's a French billionaire who tried to take over the parent company of Cinebate, which you might remember, now a large part of Ipsos, years and years ago. And he was trying to get his representatives on the board, and they were rejected. And he brought them forward again, and they were rejected. And that we loved reporting on that. Some of our silliest headlines came up about the various machinations and how they'd sat through another meeting and been turfed off and come back and things. So that was entertaining. And he also,
that's what I do love about seeing when the newsletter comes through, when it shows up in my alert. You know, kind of, it's almost like, you know, listening in on the rumor mill, right?
Yes, we have to be careful with rumors. We've learned over the years. I'll tell you about one thing we did early on, actually. We've learned over the years that there are particular ways of describing something that's a rumor, of putting it in inverted commas, quoting other people, using words like reportedly and allegedly and things. I'm sure we shouldn't have had to learn that over the years. You're supposed to know that when you start out in journalism. But we've kind of picked it up, and, you know, fingers crossed, touch wood, so far we haven't been actually sued. We had an early instance where we nearly were, where I had a lawyer on the phone because an email came through that looked like it was from an official source, and I didn't check it out because I sent it on to Nikki, who was then writing the news, our early news editor, and I think she assumed that I checked it out, and I assumed that she would check it out. Neither of us did, and it was actually a malicious email going around.
Oh.
Saying bad things about a former employer. And yeah, we published that innocently and with hindsight very foolishly. And we had people on the phone the next day saying, take it down. And it all ended up very nice. We did an interview with the former company and got their side of the story. And it was all quite jolly. But it was a strange experience, and probably one that we had to have. It made us
laugh. No, that's absolutely true. How else are you going to know?
Yeah. And I do think that there's a lot of value, and, you know, you probably know this better than anyone, in the way that you frame things. So that way you can get the sentiment across without you saying, you know, it's not definitive, it's not a fact, but this is what, you know, as the news source, you're still trying to share all sides of the story. So I think it's kind of cool in that example you gave us that you were able to have the company side as well. So the person kind of got all sides of the story, because, you know, that saying where the truth is always somewhere in the middle. Who knows, you know?
Let the readers work that out for themselves, provided you present it. Yeah. In fact, I was delighted to put the company side of the story, because that seemed to be the alternative to being sued. So that was quite a relief to be given that option. We had another example of both sides. We had something a couple of days ago about the latest version of Privacy Shield, the accords for passing data between the EU and the US, and they've come out with another draft or you know, agreement in principle. And then we put the other side of the coin, which is this Austrian activist lawyer who's Schrems, who's constantly fighting against whatever they come up with and saying it's illegal, and it gets taken down a few years later and they have to write another one. So that was a great instance of being able to put both sides, and as they leave it for readers to work out whether they think this one will actually get as far as the statute book, and if so, whether it'll come off the statute book again in 2 years, which has happened twice now, so it could not happen again. And I enjoy stories like that.
Sure, and very important to keep up with. I know we have submitted news releases to you guys. What recommendations do you have for a very successful news release?
Okay, in our case, I mean, it might be different in other publications, so I can't always speak for them, but from our point of view, we want people to stick to the facts, because whatever hype or description there is in there, we will cut most of it out. We don't want you to describe anything as a leading company, for example, because what does that mean? We've got no idea.
Puffery, right?
It is kind of, yeah. So we take a lot of that out. We'd like it in terms that are at least vaguely understandable to the general public or to our public, or our own researchers with a bit of knowledge, but not necessarily in-depth knowledge of the particular part of the field that you're involved in. We'd always like a verbatim quote, because that's the bit where we can get a bit more lyrical. We can, you know, say something that's not a fact, that's sort of what the boss says about a new employee, or what somebody says about the reasons for launching their new product or upgraded version. We usually like a picture. Apart from that, we just want you to cut out as much as you can of the hype and put the facts in, give us some background. If it's to do with people, we always like a little bit of background about them, and forget the idea, please, to anybody who's listening to this and sending a press release, that you can get away without saying anything about previous companies that a person has worked for, because that is part of our job to say that. And if you don't say it, we'll go and find it. So you might as well save us the trip to LinkedIn and give us whatever else these days. It's very, very useful, LinkedIn, I have to say. So it's a bit of background we do need as well. Awesome. And I have 100 other things I could say about what we look for, but prompt away if you want to.
No, I think that was really helpful. And I think it's really interesting too, because you would know better, you know, better than anyone about what would make a good news release. But going back towards the issue that we just did, I know that you spent a good amount of time editing it and reading through the articles that we submitted. I was curious, was there anything in there that you found surprising or that you learned about with the Brain and Bodies edition?
Was there anything I learned? Are you kidding? A list as long as my arm. Yes, I didn't know a great deal about it when we started. It's always embarrassing to be the editor of the industry paper or the owner, whatever, and say I don't know much about this topic. But obviously, within research, analytics, insight, there's a lot of subtopics. And this is, as you know, explained to me, a very scientific area. You can blind people with science. And I knew a bit about it, and I followed to the extent that I need to write sensible news items, for example. But I didn't know a great deal else. I have learned a lot about how far it's come in the last 10 years, I think, because I started very sceptical. I expected the people we talked to this time to be better and more practical than the hype-led people who were around a few years ago in the field. But I didn't realise quite how far they'd go and how they'd be very keen themselves, even without prompting from me to pull down all the things that neuroscience can't do for you. To stress that it's got to be used alongside other things, you know, it's good for particular types of work. And then I think I learned something about some of the specific applications for it. For example, we had two sponsors, yourselves, HCD and MindProber. I learned a lot about galvanic skin response from MindProber, which was fantastic, because that's a frightening set of three words, and I wanted to understand exactly what it means, and, you know, how it's the sweat passing between two points where it's measured, or it's the sweat that passes electricity faster or slower between two points, stronger conductivity, and that that was really interesting to find out about that. On HCD side, I mean, I had a whole rundown of what were the main techniques. Michelle, you talked about the gold standard techniques, and then you talked about another tranche of things which were useful, but, you know, sort of slightly more, had to be slightly more cautious with them. The data was, you know, to be used alongside other things. So that there is in that supplement a lovely article, the best practices article for anybody who's just finding their way in the topic. That's a brilliant primer. So that was really good. And also the fact that you're using it for some new applications now. And I think you said you were spreading out beyond some of your initial sort of ad response measurement and things, and doing more in the way of innovation and product development. And that was really interesting to find out how it's being used there. So that was great. That's for starters. If you want more things I've learned from it, as I say, just...
That was perfect. And I want to mention that we will share any links to Mr. Webb or MR Webb, whatever we want to call it. We will include the link for the Brain and Bodies issue, as well as if there is a link to the podcast that Michelle was a guest on for your podcast, we'll be sure to also share that with our show notes below. But I do want to move along to the segment that we shared with you off the recording, our implicit game that we like to play. We gave you the rundown of it. Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah, I'll do my best. My mind.
Awesome. All right. So it's 10 words. You just share the first word that comes to your mind. Pretty simple, pretty fast. Are you ready to get started?
How fast people are, but go on.
Awesome. All right. So the first word, podcasts.
Video.
Case studies.
Techniques.
Writing.
Novels.
Technology.
Hype.
Brains.
Cauliflowers.
I like that.
Authors.
Authors. Books. I don't know. Sorry.
That's good. That's great. Marketing.
Marketing media.
Learning.
Careers. I'll explain that one later if you want.
Editing.
Editing Mel.
And the last word, Mr. Webb.
Mr. Webb. Lifetime.
That's nice. So what is the story behind the one that you said? We'll come back to it later.
Well, something to do with learning, was it?
Yes.
Yes, I've been playing a lot of an old board game called Careers with my kids this week.
Oh, wow.
And there's various teaching and college and things are things that you can go into in the game. So that just popped into my head.
That's an interesting game, Careers, playing it with, you said 5 and 9, right?
Yeah. They're very, very into it suddenly. Want to play.
Oh, those. Wow. That's cool.
Gets them away from the screen. So they're great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. If people have any questions for you or are interested in signing up for Mr. Webb, how can they get in touch with you? How can they find you?
Okay. The URL or the domain is mrwebb.com. So it's mrweb.com. Don't put two B's on the end of it, as some people have occasionally. It's as in World Wide Web. So you can email us at hello@mrwebb.com. And you can look at the site, www.mrwebb.com. You can also look at us on Twitter. That's at Mr. Webb News. So MrWebNews. So follow us there.
Wonderful. Awesome.
Well, thank you so much again for joining us. And we were really happy to be able to partner with you and sponsor the Brain and Bodies issue. It was a lot of fun to contribute to. Michelle, do you have any final send-offs you want to give?
Yeah, I definitely have always appreciated getting, you know, the notifications in my mail with the news of the day. So thank you very much.
Great pleasure and a business.
Awesome. Well, thank you, everybody. Until next time, we'll be in touch. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks.
HCD Mindset is produced by Helen Ross. For more information or updates, follow HCD Research on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at HCD Research Inc. and at HCD Neuroscience. Subscribe to our YouTube channel and be sure to rate, review, and follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you and stay tuned for more curious conversations.